Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita. Rana's not with us today.
And I'm Jean Marie. And if you hear that background noise, we have two dogs snoring underneath the table.
Yes, we do. Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're speaking with Evelyn Gamble. She's joining us today to talk about her experiences with hypogonadism. Hello, Evelyn.
Hi, Evelyn.
Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time. We did a little research before talking with you today and found out that hypogonadism, which I'm probably mispronouncing, occurs when your sex glands produce little or no sex hormones. The sex glands, also called the gonads, are primarily the testes in men and the ovaries in women. And sex hormones help control secondary sex characteristics, such as breast development in women, testicular development in men, and pubic hair growth. Sex hormones also play a role in the menstrual cycle and sperm production. Also, we found that there are two different types. There's primary hypogonadism and secondary hypogonadism. You mentioned you weren't sure which type you had, so let's get into your specific symptoms and when they started. And can you tell our listeners when you or your parents were first aware that there was an issue?
I have hypogonadotropic hypogonadism, which is like the longest thing ever dispelled. It's the most difficult thing to explain.
Ten million points on Scrabble, though.
Yes.
Yes, for sure. Use all the letters and more. I knew that something was wrong when I was in middle school because I didn't have a period yet and everyone else did. And they're talking about this thing and I'm sitting there like, what in the world is happening to everyone? Like, I'm doing just fine sitting here, but everyone's in a mood today.
Mm-hmm.
We went to my doctors and they were like, you know what? Like, you're really athletic. You're doing soccer. We think you're just a late bloomer. Like, mm-hmm. Let's check back in a year. So then a year goes by and I'm about to start high school. And I'm like, you know what, guys? Like, this isn't it. Like, there's something else. Mm-hmm. And I really just like had a feeling like something wasn't right. So I started doing my own research. We're talking to my doctors. They're telling me I'm a late bloomer. My parents are telling me I'm a late bloomer. Everyone's going against me. And so finally, I think it's my senior year of high school at this point. So like 5 years have gone by. And I'm just chilling. Everyone's telling me I'm a late bloomer. And then finally, they said, you know, we don't think you're a late bloomer anymore. We think something else is going on. So we're going to run your DNA. We're going to start you on some estrogen and see what's going on. So it took about 8 weeks. And I remember I left school. And the day I left school, all the schools in America shut down because of COVID.
Oh,
so
wow.
I left school for a doctor's appointment with the genetic counselor to hear what the results were.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm on this doctor's appointment, everyone is texting me that the school's being shut down. And it's a Friday afternoon. And so they're like, you know what? We found the results. You have this disease. It's called hypogonadotropic hypogonadism. It's really similar. It's basically Kallmann syndrome. So you're going to have this for the rest of your life. And there's some things that we have to do. And everyone this whole time had been asking me if I had a sense of smell, if I could smell normally, and I was really weirded out. I was like, yes, I can smell. What is the issue? And they were saying how a lot of people who have this disease actually have their smell impacted.
Oh.
So that's a way to diagnose it, is if someone's like, oh yeah, do you smell that? And you have no idea what they're talking about, then mm-hmm. your sense of smell is like starting to be impacted. Which I barely started to notice when they said that, which didn't help anything because COVID was hitting.
Oh.
And one of the symptoms of COVID is if you can't smell.
Sure.
So every time someone would ask me, I'd be like, okay, it's not COVID, but I can't smell what you're talking about. Right. And it was the whole thing.
Wow.
But that's kind of what happened when I first got diagnosed.
So
okay.
there was a lot happening. That was
yeah.
a lot to take in.
There was.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
and a lot of conflicting things that right. it might make it difficult to get diagnosed.
Right, right. Yeah, of all the times to need to get something diagnosed, the, you know, start of
the COVID start of COVID, yeah, yeah, that COVID was rough.
Adds to the challenge. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, for
well,
sure.
To give everyone a little background on the two types called primary and central, I got some good information from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia online. In primary hypogonadism, the testes or ovaries don't function properly. In central hypogonadism, the hypothalamus and pituitary gland don't function properly. And these areas of the brain signal the testes or ovaries to produce the sex hormones. This form of hypogonadism can cause infertility. The most common cause of primary hypogonadism is Klinefelter syndrome in boys and Turner syndrome in girls. 1 in 2,500 to 10,000 babies are born with Turner syndrome, and 1 in 500 to 1,000 are born with Klinefelter syndrome. Other causes of primary hypogonadism are certain autoimmune disorders like Addison's disease and hypoparathyroidism, infections, liver and kidney disease, radiation, and surgery can cause primary hypogonadism. Causes of central hypogonadism include genetic disorders, like you were saying, Kallmann syndrome, anorexia nervosa, infections again, nutritional deficiencies, pituitary disorders, radiation, surgery again, trauma, tumors, a rapid weight loss, steroid or opiate use, and central hypogonadism affects boys and girls equally. So you mentioned that your doctors
did genetic testing.
So they said that it was something like the Kallmann syndrome?
Yeah, so they ran my DNA and actually found the specific genetic mutation. I have an FRFG1 gene mutation, which is linked to Kallmann syndrome.
Okay.
Which is really interesting because Kallmann's actually more common in boys than girls. So
okay.
It was very new.
Okay.
And what symptoms have you, like, has your condition changed over time? And with the addition of estrogen, how has that affected your condition?
It was a really rough start. I started estrogen in January. And right after that, I started having abdominal pain every day when I would wake up in the morning.
Oh.
And I lived away from my parents in Modesto. And I was in the ER, I think, 10 times last year.
Oh, my gosh.
8 of those as a minor without parents there, which was really rough with COVID.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. And I kept saying, you know, like, I just started this estrogen, like, it's the estrogen. You need to, like, stop me from the estrogen. And everyone's telling me, you know, estrogen isn't just for what you think it is. It's for your heart. It's for your skin. Like, you need this. So I'm having doctors, like, increase my estrogen, and then I'm going to the ER 2 times more that month because my body's just not accepting it. So I got put into this extra care program at my private hospital, and finally, we've kind of figured out an estrogen balance, but it comes to find out that not only does my body not produce estrogen, but it's allergic to estrogen.
Oh.
So every time they were giving me estrogen, my body was having almost an anaphylactic shock of its own and shutting down. And so I was in an ER with doctors like, so where's your parents? And I'm like, well, they're 2 hours away. And I'd have to make every visit a confidential visit for them to be able to treat me. And it was the biggest pain. And there's no visitors because of COVID.
Right,
so of course,
right.
Everything is just going crazy. At one point, I didn't eat for 2 days because my stomach hurt so bad. that I had to go to the hospital in the ER. I had to get an emergency COVID test and drive up to Sacramento, which was like 3 hours away, for an emergency endoscopy.
Oh my gosh.
COVID has just thrown everything, but it's been really crazy. But we finally figured out an estrogen balance, thank goodness.
Okay. Well, that's good.
And has your experience influenced what you plan on doing for a living? You know, are you considering?
It does.
Okay.
I graduated high school during COVID. And so, you know, I planned on going to college. I was valedictorian of my class. And then I realized at one point, I've been in the ER 10 times. There is no way I'm going to be able to do college and be in the ER at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I was very lucky to have a very understanding job, because it was almost like I'm about to have to quit my job to be able to medically take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got really hard and really stressful. And so I just had to work and keep going to ER visits and millions of doctor's appointments. And finally, we have a very good Kaiser hospital here that mm-hmm. takes really good care of me. And I'm able to work and start school in January, but it did throw a big wrench in a lot of my plans that I've had, which really sucked. But
wow. That sounds like it's been a rough start for sure. Right.
But you know
it
what?
Has been.
But there's a learning curve.
Right. And you obviously are a very resilient person, and you know, I think you're going to help a lot of people with that, the fact that you're, you know, you're resilient and you're able to work through all this. I mean, I can't think of a confluence of other things that would be more stressful than everything you've been going through. So you've kind of like, you know, you're over hopefully that hill, and everything from now on will be easy.
Right, right.
Exactly. And I think it's definitely helped me mature.
Mm-hmm.
And learn so quickly. There's so many times where I feel like a doctor or a pharmacist myself, mm-hmm. or I think about how I had to go through so many medical experiences as a minor alone mm-hmm. and make so many medical decisions that now as an adult, still having COVID in place and no visitors, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier of a transition for me than a lot of my friends who have never been to the doctors with mm-hmm. their parents or as often as I have. I definitely see like a difference in how easier of a time I have than some of my friends.
Yeah, you certainly grew up quickly, didn't you?
Yes.
And, wow.
And also, we agree with the whole you should get an honorary medical degree for everything you've
yes.
been through.
Yeah.
For sure, for mm-hmm. sure.
And everything you've had to learn.
But your job, you say, it was flexible and working with you to get through the humps, and now things are balanced out and you're doing okay?
Yes. I left several times for ER visits. I would have doctor's appointments during my lunch break, and they'd say, you need to go to the ER. So there I am going to the ER, going into surgeries, having doctor's appointments that turn into lab works and overnight stays. I was really lucky with the job that I had,
well,
and not everyone's as fortunate.
Yeah, that's
great. It does sound challenging.
That's great.
Well, does anything... can you do anything to help with your symptoms, you know, make them, you know, does doing more, you know, and participating in like physical exercise help? Or do you have to kind of ease off on that? Is there, you know, cold packs, hot packs, is there anything that helps you get through the pain and has helped you get through this whole process?
Hot packs have helped stomach pain.
Okay.
I've come to find that tea is also really comforting.
Mm-hmm.
My aunt would always make me tea when I was living with her, and it would always help. That's all I can really think of.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have to have any intermittent testing to keep your hormones balanced now?
I do. So I have to have testing every 3 months. We do blood work. Every 6 months, we do a bone density scan. So that's a scan that tells you how old your bones are.
Mm-hmm.
So physiologically, I'm 19 years old, about to be. And my bones have been 12 years old for the past 5 years now.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. But since I've been on estrogen for the past year and a half, they've grown to become 13 years old. So I'm still 5 years behind, give or take.
Okay.
We're catching up slowly.
Okay. Did your condition affect your stature as well then?
No, I'm 5'8" and 120 pounds, so I'm very tall for my age. And they tell me that my bones are really easy to break, but I've never broken a bone. Knock on wood.
Well, knock on wood. Yeah. For sure.
Good deal. Okay. And, you know, with the pandemic and everything, were you able to do any televisits, or was it more you had to be on site because they needed to do the additional lab work and surgeries and follow up?
I averaged 6 televisits a week.
Oh, wow.
And I would go in for lab work like once a week, once every 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then when someone's on estrogen for a prolonged period of time, they have to check your heart a lot.
Okay.
So I would always go in for vitals. I had a heart monitor for 60 days last year throughout the holidays of Thanksgiving and Christmas, which was not my favorite. And then I had another one just a few weeks ago because I went into tachycardia, which could also have been a side effect of the estrogen because the estrogen works a lot with your heart. Mm-hmm. So having too much can cause a lot of issues. So I went in and my heart rate was 150. And so I got admitted and was stuck there. But yeah, so that's kind of a lot of the things that happen.
Okay.
Is in the future, is there a possibility that gene editing could help you?
I am not sure. I haven't heard of that, to be honest.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's all new to you, and you're going to learn as you go.
Right.
Exactly.
And you're going to be at the forefront of it.
Right. But you're in a good location. I mean, like you were saying, Kaiser is a good hospital system. And
Yes, I'm very lucky.
Yeah, I'm sure that they'll get on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Evelyn, over the past year or so, how has what role has self-care taken in your daily routine? And have you been able to maintain friendships during the pandemic lockdown?
Self-care is really big. It gets really stressful dealing with medical decisions on a daily basis, especially as a teen and a growing teen that doesn't understand much of it.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the most overwhelming jobs that I feel like I've had. It's really hard. There's a lot of information thrown at you. Half of it doesn't make sense and it never will. So really just doing the things you love has so much of a bigger impact now for me. Taking the time to like put my phone down and genuinely be in the moment is the most rewarding thing I can do because it is really stressful.
I'm sure.
This was the hardest transition as an adult I could have ever imagined having.
Mm-hmm.
And so just doing whatever you love is really important. I've been really lucky to have really great friends by my side who have seen what I've gone through, who have volunteered to go to doctor's appointments with me so I'm not alone, who would remind me every day to take my medicine because I would forget. I've had really great friends who stepped up during the pandemic. So I've been very grateful for that.
That's excellent.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And are you considered at high risk, you know, for getting COVID? And so have you been socially isolating, wearing a mask? And then also, have you received the vaccination? And how does that come into play?
So I am considered high risk for COVID. My immune system, I'm on a lot of medications that can affect my immune system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a healthcare worker in a mental health clinic myself. So I was able to get the vaccine very early in the year.
Mm-hmm.
I got vaccinated in January and it hit me really hard. I was out for about 4 days time I got the vaccine.
Yeah.
And I am now eligible based on my medical record for a booster shot of the vaccine.
Good.
So I have one of those scheduled, but At first, I was very scared and very nervous about getting COVID. So all of my friends, I would make them wash their hands. They would have to have a temperature check before they came in my house. I would ask them all the questions. But now, you know, knowing that my friends are vaccinated and for the most part, they're pretty good socially distanced, I'm not too worried anymore.
Good.
If I'm in like a Costco, I'll wear a face mask. If I'm in like a smaller store, I won't because I am vaccinated. But it kind of just depends on how I'm feeling that day and how nervous I am.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. I understand that. Mm-hmm. Well, to keep on a timely episode, we're going to skip the lightning round questions.
Unless, do you have time? I know that,
yeah, you wanted to try to wrap this up earlier, so we can do that. What tips or hints or advice do you have to someone that has been recently diagnosed with such a disease like this?
The biggest thing I can say is to find yourself resources. I am on Facebook groups. There's a lot of people on Instagram who share their medical stories and who will support you. You have to find your resources. But the biggest thing for me is whether you're diagnosed or you feel like you have a diagnosis and you diagnosed yourself, you have to be your own advocate for anything in this life. That is the one thing that all of this has taught me, is you know your body better than any doctor or any lab test that comes back normal. If you feel like something's not right, you have to fight for yourself to get your own answer.
Well, yeah, so, you were saying 5 years.
Right.
You know, you knew for
you
5 years.
Knew,
five
you kind of knew.
5 years
right.
Yeah.
Of someone telling me that I'm okay and convincing my parents that I'm okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you just know. There's no other way to say it, but you have a feeling that something is not right in your body. And it is up to you to fight for that and mm-hmm. to fight for your own answers and treatment. And that is the biggest reward that you can have because you can use it in every day. But no matter what any doctor tells you, you just have to advocate for yourself.
Excellent.
Great
advice.
And how do you stay positive, and how have you stayed positive throughout this whole experience?
I'm gonna be honest, it's really hard at times. There's times when I'm not very positive and I'm sitting here like, wow, I just want to not take any medicine anymore, ditch all these appointments. Who wants to do this every day? But at the end of the day, I have so many people who have supported me and who have truly cared about me that it's almost like I didn't do all of this for nothing. Mm-hmm. I didn't do all of this to just stop right here.
Right.
Like at this point, if I'm going to go in, I'm going to go all in. So you just have to know that it's hard right now. And today, tomorrow, next week, there might not be a good outcome, mm-hmm. but somewhere down the road there will be. And that's what you're fighting for.
Okay.
Good advice.
And have you been able to bring anything with you to your doctor's office and to the hospital for those ER visits so that to make it a little bit easier to get through?
I always take headphones. That's a must. I will always bring someone with me if I can. And I will always say, if you ever go to the ER, mm-hmm. you always take a phone charger.
Oh.
The one time I didn't take a phone charger, I got admitted into the hospital.
Oh.
And I had to steal a nurse's phone charger, which I will give her back one day.
Okay.
Because it was so awful. But always take a phone charger with you. You never know how long you're going to be there.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and phones are kind of like our lifeline nowadays.
Right.
That's great advice.
Exactly. Right. Especially during COVID, they are your only outlet to the outside world.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
yep.
true. Jeez. Well, Evelyn, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today and for being on the show. How can our listeners learn more about this condition?
You can... There's not much on this condition. It's really rare.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one in 500,000 people that have it in the worldwide. So there's not too much on it. But you can Google it. You can look out in the news for genetic progress.
Right.
Okay.
Are you on any social networks that you want to share that people can reach out to you?
I have Instagram.
Okay.
My username is my name, Evely. And then 3 N's, and then my last name, Gamble, Gamble.
Okay,
thank you.
We will put that, a link for that on our website.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. We really, like I said, we appreciate you taking the time, and you're obviously very, very busy. And we hope that everything is smooth sailing from now on for
you. Yes, and make sure that you take a couple of days off after your booster shot to do some self-care.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining the show. If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, on our website, podcastdx.com. We're also found on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, and TikTok.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard in this podcast.
Till next week.